Welcome or welcome back, podcast tours. We are so excited that you're here, and we have what we believe is going to be a long case this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's 10 pages of notes, so.
And normally, I normally have 4 to 5, so yours is like double the length. So before we get started this week, I did want to give a huge shout out to my friend Kyle J, who is currently listening. I'm not going to say his last name because I don't know if he wants us to say his last name.
No.
Who has been listening nonstop in Virginia. Ooh. Dude.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you, Kyle. We see you. Real recognizes real, dude. Thanks.
Thank you. We appreciate you.
Yeah. So whenever you're ready, Kayla, I mean, I don't think there's any other business, so.
No, I don't think so. Okay, well, buckle up. Like, literally. You're going to have to strap yourself in your seat for this one. I am covering the case of Keith Jesperson, otherwise known as the Happy Face Killer. And nothing about this case is happy. Literally nothing. Not even his childhood. So, welcome to the shit show.
Like we were saying before we started, I know the Happy Face theory, but I don't think
smiley
I know anything.
Face.
Oh, yeah,
smiley face theory, yeah.
I don't think I know anything about this one. So I'm excited.
Well, you're going to learn a lot, and you're going to want to, like, dump it at the end. I'm telling you, the research that I've done, I had weird dreams after researching this, so I don't want this shit anymore.
Ew, yeah.
I'm going to unload the shit show to you guys. And then you can do whatever you want with it.
Upload and forget about it, so.
Oh, yeah. I hope your coping skills are good.
Definitely not. I'm 24 years old.
If you did not get the memo, this is your advisory and your trigger warning. You're going to hear about animal cruelty. You're going to hear about rape. You're going to hear about murder. You're going to hear about sadistic tendencies.
Jeez.
That's just the cake topper.
So this is your get out of episode free card, people. Unfortunately, I don't have one, so.
Yeah.
I've now buckled up.
You're stuck. Locked and loaded. Let's go. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
Take a breather. Anybody who needs coffee, you're gonna go get it. All right. So Keith Jesperson was born April 6th, 1965 in Chilliwack, British Columbia, Canada.
Aw, Canada.
Canada. So he has 8 confirmed murder victims.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like a lot for a serial killer, but I mean, he killed 8 people, so.
I mean, I guess when you compare him to, you know, Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, the quote, big hitters that everyone knows. He's not high up, but 8 people is a lot of fucking people.
It is. So 8 confirmed murders. 1 woman was assaulted and he let her go. So there's another victim.
So he targets women?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this is an episode about a guy hating women.
Ugh, aren't they
all? But if you listen to the research I've done, I'm going to say this, and it's going to elicit a reaction. I 30% feel bad for him. 30%.
You feel bad for the serial killer or the child?
Kind of both. We'll get into it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm ready to see if I have that same opinion.
I think he was, my personal opinion after doing all the research, he was groomed into what he ended up becoming.
Okay.
The 8 women that he murdered, it was over the course of 5 years. So between January 23rd, 1990 and March 16th, 1995, those were his killing years. He was apprehended March 30th of 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And he is currently serving in Oregon State Penitentiary. And he got life imprisonment without parole. And we'll come back to that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. So his early life, it's long. He was a shy and curious but obedient child. He was the middle child of 5 children, but he was constantly made fun of by his siblings especially because he had a learning disability.
Mm-hmm.
His father was abusive and alcoholic, and he treated Keith the worst out of his kids. So Keith ended up spending most of his time alone. He found a crow with a broken wing at some point, and he took it home. He splinted it. He, like, tried to fix this bird up and, mm-hmm. like, just get it back out on his own. He even named it. I think he called it Blackie.
Aw, cute.
And then his brother Bruce decided to take the crow and then just continuously laughed at Keith. Took the bird to his friend's house, trapped the bird in a cage, and then he and his friend threw knives at the bird until it was dead while Keith was pleading for him not to.
Oh, that's really sad.
Yeah, so his brother's a douche and a half. Sorry.
Did Bruce kill 8 women, though?
I mean, he hasn't been caught.
Yeah, he's probably a little better than Keith, though. Not at this age.
Yeah. Okay. Better outcome than Keith had?
Yeah.
Bruce wasn't beaten the fuck up like Keith was.
Yeah.
I know I sound like I'm defending a serial killer. I'm not. I just don't appreciate when parents treat their children differently.
Yeah.
Okay, so this obviously devastated Keith, and then he was also angry because his brother just isn't listening to him, on top of which he gets bullied by his siblings all the time. So he storms into their house, goes into his brother's room, and just starts destroying his brother's shit.
Good.
Yeah, that's
what
I do. Your
brother killed an animal for no reason.
Mm-hmm. However, when his dad got home, he got pissed and beat the crap out of Keith because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when Keith explained this, his dad was like, it's just a fucking bird, blah, blah, blah. Probably just like that, I don't know. So Keith's father and grandfather started taking him hunting, which encouraged him to kill animals more. They really just had, like, this attitude of, it's just an animal, it can be killed. And from the research, it seems like they wanted him to change his attitude on animals.
Yeah, that's really sad. I don't view animals like that.
Not saying that hunting is bad.
No, not at all. But definitely saying to view an animal as lesser is kind of dishonest.
Yeah.
Because they're definitely living things with feelings. They might just be a little bit dumber than us, but they still have feelings.
Yeah, not okay to just sadistically kill animals.
No, yeah, and I think, especially with hunting, you should teach your children, hey, like, this is a very serious thing that you're doing, taking something's life, and you're doing it for a reason, and we will utilize and think this animal in every way possible, you know? I just think there's a right way to go about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's a wrong way, which I'm going to assume Keith went
Welcome
up
the to
wrong
the wrong
way. Yeah.
So his father then decided to give Keith the job of getting rid of wild animals that were around the house, mostly feral cats.
Oh. I love cats.
Me too. Okay, it's important to note that he didn't have a good relationship with his father, obviously, because his father treated him differently, abused him more verbally and physically. So he couldn't really bond with his father at all until his dad gave him this job of hunting, you know, like, the wild animals. So although he kind of hated his father at this point, he still wanted to bond with him. So they did that by thinking of cruel ways of killing the animals around the house.
What a weird bonding experience.
What a shitty father.
Yeah.
So they eventually settled on putting the cats in burlap sacks and drowning them in the river.
Got dark fast.
How's your root beer?
That's pretty good. But all of a sudden it tasted pretty bitter at the end with that sentence.
So his first friends ended up being people who liked the fact that he had this reputation for torturing animals.
Oh. Who likes that? I guess other animal torturers.
I guess. So yeah, any other friends that he attempted to make ended in fights. So one such friend, his name was Martin. So his parents tried to make him befriend the son of their couple friend. Martin. And Martin would end up, Martin was a shit. Martin would take Keith to the parts of their property where they weren't supposed to go. And then Martin would break valuables. Keep in mind, this is Keith's property.
Uh-huh.
Keith's house. So Martin would break Keith's family's shit. Just nonchalantly, fuck your vase.
Wow.
You don't need it. I don't know if they had a vase.
A vase.
A vase. So when they were caught, Martin claimed that it was Keith who did the damage. And I guess this happened like a couple of times. And Keith had enough.
Good.
So he ended up beating the crap out of Martin.
Not good.
Telling him he was going to kill him.
Not good.
And then Keith's father had to pull him off of Martin. If his father had not pulled him off of Martin, he would have killed him.
How old is he again? Sorry.
Six young. Or so at this point.
Holy, that's young.
Yeah. So Keith actually explained to his father what Martin had done, and his father whipped him with a belt anyway.
What?
So no matter what he does, he's wrong in his father's eyes.
Yeah.
Except when you're killing cats. Are you guys still with me? I hope so. It'll get better.
Will it?
I guess it won't really get better. There's small pieces of hope everywhere, though. It'll keep you hanging on. Okay. Keith and his friends were playing outside of a dairy farm one day when a worker called them into the farm. So once inside, the worker claimed that he was going to teach the kids about sex. And then he took off his clothes.
Wow.
So the worker started playing with himself and then ended up choosing a boy. At this point, Keith became uncomfortable, put his clothes on, and ran. Because the kids took their clothes off, too.
Oh my god, a predator.
Yeah. So, Keith got out of there. But the other boy stayed. And then he later heard that the boy that the worker chose had ended up being raped.
Great. No surprise.
That's his first sex-oriented interaction.
Yeah. Not in any way good.
Around this time, the family decided to leave the area. Keith's father got a job that was a lot better than the one that he had had, and they ended up moving to Selah, Washington. So now we're coming to the U.S. When Keith joined his new school, he was put into advanced courses. So remember we said he had learning difficulties? Well, in Canada, apparently the schools are much better than the U.S.,
duh.
So in Canada, he was struggling, but when he came to the U.S., he was smart as hell, I guess. So
I feel like that says a lot.
Yeah. So he was still socially awkward, though. So he didn't really make new friends at, or new, he didn't make friends at his new school. He was still made fun of due to his size, his learning disability, his socially awkwardness, and they made fun of him for his Canadian accent.
Oh, that's fucked up.
Welcome to the U.S.
That is true. We're mean.
Yeah, we are. So Keith's father ended up putting him to work during the summer, and he taught him how to work farm equipment and do, like, welding. But we all know Keith's father, he's not the nicest person. He was impatient when he taught Keith, but he did teach him the right way to work farm equipment and weld. I don't know. So when Keith told his father at one point that he wanted a bike, he made Keith work to earn money for it. And when the time came that he had saved enough to buy the bike, his father took him to buy it, but then also, on a whim, just decided to buy the same bike for his brother, who did not have to work, for said bike.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
What is this saying? All are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Mm-hmm. Alright, you strapped in?
Mm-hmm.
At the age of 11, Keith had to pay room and board to his father.
Oh. What the fuck? That's so young. Well, I guess maybe that wasn't so young in the 70s, whatever year it is.
What parent from the 70s made their kids pay room and board?
I mean, by the time you were, like, 16, I feel like that's completely normal. Well, okay, I still think
he's 11.
Wouldn't do it to my kids. Yeah, but I feel like the age where you were deemed responsible was quite a bit younger in the 70s.
Okay. Hold on. Hold on to your armrests. After his 14th birthday, Keith found out that none of his other siblings were made to pay room and board.
Aw. Animal Farm, baby. All are equal, but some are more equal.
So he pleaded with his mother, and then his mother pleaded with his father and made him stop paying, but would not repay him for the money that he had paid to his father in those 3 years, and his father told him that it could be a lesson for him. What's the lesson there, buddy?
Yeah, what is the lesson? Capitalism is horrible?
I don't know. So the family ends up taking a vacation, and Keith met an older girl who seemed to be interested in him. They snuck away to go make out, and then the girl took her shirt off. But Keith was disgusted.
What?
By her boobs.
What? Boobs are magnificent things, Keith.
Well, wait. His reaction at the age of 14 to boobs made psychologists think that in his mind he was still in a prepubescent stage.
So he's like mentally younger than what he is.
Yeah, he's not developed appropriately sexually. Psychologists believe. Which ones? I don't know. So, this, of course, got around to other people around town that he reacted poorly to boobs. His father found out and laughed at him. Just made fun of him. That's through his neat face. Like the dick that he is. And then, of course, this upset Keith, and he ended up running down to the docks. And then he just retreated into his imagination like he did a lot of the time. And then he had, like, stayed down there for a few hours waiting for someone to come get him. No one ever showed up.
Aw. Poor guy.
So when the family got back home from this vacation, Keith started doing research on sex and then was determined to prove his manhood to his father.
Oh, my.
So here we go. Dad's teaching him more dumb shit. Then this is part of why I think he was groomed into the person that he became.
Yeah, it's like a nature versus nurture argument here.
Yeah. But I mean, if you want to talk about that argument in the beginning, his nature towards animals was really loving.
Yeah.
He was nurtured into this by both his siblings, other people, and I know you can't control the public's reaction towards you. You can control your own feelings towards it.
Yeah.
But he was never taught that, I don't think.
No, I agree. I think it is a more of a nurturing case. I definitely think the nature is in there because his dad's such a dick, but
yeah. I agree. But I feel like if he hadn't been around his father, maybe he would have had a chance.
Maybe, yeah.
Anyway, he goes on a fishing trip with his dad. He met a girl who was 4 years older than him. And then at the time, Keith said that she was more than willing to have sex with him on the beach. And then later on, I guess after he was apprehended, Keith said that he actually raped her.
Wow.
1971, after getting his driver's license at the age of 16 years old, he bought himself a car and then drove around town to shoot animals.
Oh my god.
As Keith Jesperson does. So he started to enjoy torturing animals, obviously, and he began using other weapons such as cherry bombs, pipe bombs, other, you know, not just guns.
Yeah, so at this point it's all about the, like, torturing him. It's not even about the killing. It's about torturing.
Yes, and that was brought about because his father decided to bond with him by thinking of the cruelest manner to kill cats. So.
Aw, he was a handsome young man.
Yeah.
And now he's a dirtbag who should rot in hell.
The only animals that he was not interested in killing were dogs. At some point, his father had brought home a chocolate lab who they named Duke, and it was the family's dog. However, Duke was just attached to Keith, so they were best friends. they slept together, they went out together, like,
yeah,
it's cute. One day he comes home and Duke's nowhere to be found.
Oh.
Come to find out, his father shot Duke. His dad claimed that he did so to put the dog out of his misery because Duke had gotten into coyote poisoning. But Keith did not believe his dad and thought he killed Duke just to be cruel.
That's fucked up.
And here's the nature versus nurture thing. So yes, he was nurtured, but here's part of his nature, I think. From that day on, Keith made it a point to kill any dogs that crossed his path. That's a weird spite.
Yeah. It's almost to, like, spite your daddy. I'm not a psychologist, so, you know, this is just all me.
Yeah.
Projecting and making my own assumptions, but that's so weird.
Mm-hmm. So when his dad kept bringing home new dogs, he would hurt them, and he even encouraged one to jump out of a moving car.
This is fucked up. I need to go hug my dog, so hurry this shit up.
Now we're going to move into young adulthood. So, 1973, an 18-year-old Keith moved out of the family home and lived in an apartment. He got a job at a gas station pumping gas, and then for 2 years, he was so happy living on his own and being away from his family. 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, go back to when he was in high school, Keith saved up money to buy a motorcycle, and when he bought it, it was considered his prized possession. So Keith's father one day just asked to borrow it, but his mom pleaded for Keith not to let him because his dad was alcoholic and he liked to drink and drive. So he bullies his son into giving him the motorcycle. He then proceeds to drink and drive, eventually crashes it into a ditch, and then has to be hospitalized.
And the motorcycle was not as totaled?
I don't know how much damage there was, but his father asked him to take over the family business while he was recuperating. His mother told him that he needed to move back home for the time being.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Fuck that, mom. And then his father also told him that he had to sell the motorcycle because he could not stand the sight of it.
I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. So Keith ended up being stuck back home underneath his parents' control. So Keith meets this girl named Rose Pernick at a local diner one night when he was getting takeout. And at the time, Rose was 17. Keith asked her out on a date, but Rose refused. So then Keith continued to ask her out until she eventually agreed to date him.
Ugh, that's so annoying.
Yeah. His father was excited and wanted him to marry her as soon as possible. So Keith actually didn't really like Rose that much after they were dating for a little while. But because his parents and Rose all pressured him to get married, he ended up getting married. He proposed to her.
It almost sounds like he's seeking, like, validation and approval from his father in particular.
Well, he is.
Yeah, for sure.
He is. He grew up, like, all the way until the age of 18. His dad has never accepted him for anything other than when he was torturing animals. And even then, it's like a push-pull. Like, he gives a little bit, but it's still, like, not loving and nurturing. Like, it's not good fatherly love. It's just not.
Not at all.
So, yes, he hates his father, but he also wants his father to approve of him.
The love he never got. Aww.
Yeah.
Still fuck this guy, but I feel really bad for the kid.
Oh, yeah. So, the night of the wedding, the two had actually argued because Keith's family members had been getting drunk. Probably his dad. Keith also realized that he didn't enjoy having sex with Rose, and he ended up going back to killing animals. So, for a little while, he was fine. You know, when he got away from his family, he was fine. His father then hired him to take care of unwanted pests at one of his businesses, and Keith would end up poisoning the animals, chopping off their heads, and throwing them in the incinerator while they were still alive.
Jesus Christ. This dude's fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, he should know better.
Yeah, 18 years old, all of a sudden my sympathy for him is just gone.
Yes.
Fuck this kid.
Yes.
Rotten prison, bro.
So a few years into the marriage, he found a job as a truck driver. And Keith was actually determined not to have children because he didn't want to be like his father. He was so afraid that he would be like his father, but he was also afraid that he would have children who would act like him and, like, guess, torture animals. So he didn't want to have kids.
Yeah.
But he ended up having two.
Oh, that's just great.
And eventually a third.
Oh, God.
So he had one daughter and one son. He confronted his own father and told him he was not allowed to be abusive towards Keith's children. So this is the first time he stood up to his father.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Maybe he'll turn it around. He won't.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, judging by the fact that we're talking about him on a true crime podcast, he definitely will not.
He's turning That's it the around. End of it. He turned it around. Keith attacked a stray cat in front of his children at one point, and then this caused strain and friction between him and his family.
Gee, I'd fucking say.
Yeah.
I feel bad because I'm not providing any funny commentary, but there's, it's like, what the fuck is funny?
There's the 30% sympathy, and then at that point, we're done. Yeah. The sympathy is gone now.
Yeah, there's like nothing that you can say to lighten this case
at all. Oh no, you're welcome. Because there's more friction and strain between him and his family, and Keith was gone most of the time because he was a truck driver, when he was home, all he wanted to do was have sex with Rose. She didn't want to have sex all the time. Hello. Just so everyone knows, we don't want to have sex all the time.
But if you do, there's nothing wrong with that. But no, I just pushed three kids out of my vagina. I don't really feel like having sex all the time.
Well, two at this point. Yeah, at this point. But yeah,
no,
like...
No, thank you.
When she refused, it made him mad, and then he would verbally abuse her for her fluctuating weight.
Wow.
I wish I could clip that. Your face was great.
He's fucked up. That's mean.
Yeah, it is mean. So, the family moved to Canada because he got some job in Canada. I guess he thought he was happier there. So the first chance he got, he moved his family to Canada. And then, they started doing better. However, Rose did not take it as well as he would have liked. She was afraid that the schools were too difficult for the children.
Suck it up. Get better at school.
Keith eventually got fired from two jobs. Rose got pregnant with her third child, and his mother was diagnosed with cancer all around the same time.
That's a lot of shit all at once.
Yep, and this caused the family to move back to the United States. And this is where Keith's violent sexual desires came back.
Ugh, this dude sucks.
Keith ended up getting tired of begging his wife for sex, so he just stopped and started cheating on her. He started seeing this unnamed waitress who could apparently just keep up with his sexual desires. And a few months into his affair, Keith told his wife that he was not happy. But the only response she gave him was to roll over in bed and say nothing. So the next day he left on a job. Of course, he's a truck driver again. So he was gone for about a week, and when he came back, Rose had moved her entire family to her parents' house in Spokane, Washington, which
Hell
is approximately
yeah, girlfriend.
200 miles away from where they lived.
Fuck yeah.
They ended up filing for divorce.
Gee, I'd say.
The waitress that he was seeing actually had kids of her own. You buckled up.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Tighten it. You ever been in one of those underwater tunnels?
Uh-uh.
You driving through?
Okay,
cool. I just feel like you would just feel like you're suffocating. But that's just me.
Have you ever been in one?
No, I won't go. I'm afraid they'll break while I'm in there and I don't want to drown.
Yeah, you definitely die. And then you could be an episode on your own podcast.
No, thank you. The waitress he was seeing had kids of her own, and she would often abuse her own children just like Keith's father. So when Keith confronted her about it at one point and told her to stop, she did not listen, obviously.
Yeah.
The two got into a fight and Keith left for a few hours. When he came back, the waitress was drunk and passed out on her bed. And then, Keith became aroused.
Oh my god.
Can you guess what happened next?
He raped her.
4 times.
Holy shit, oh my god. I do not like this case. Not even a little.
Okay, so the waitress wakes up the next morning and notices that her clothes are not on, and she can't remember taking them off. So she calls Keith and asks if he raped her. And he's like, yeah. What?
No.
Are you kidding me? Is that a normal response? Okay. Sure did. Thanks, I guess. So actually, before the rape, Keith had planned to leave the waitress and go back to his ex-wife, Rose. But because he enjoyed the rape so much, he went back to the waitress. Who
Rose
took him back?
She took him back. Oh.
She took him back.
Oh my god. I can't. Literally, that's so
PSA,
fucked up.
PSA. If your boyfriend rapes you, don't take him back.
He's not a good dude.
Call the cops. Don't take a shower. Get a rape kit done. Put his ass in jail.
And I think the big thing here is it's not like they've been together for like years. You know, like he's not deliberately doing the cycle of abuse.
Maybe a year they've been together. Yeah, so.
Girl. No.
And she's not controlled by him at all, because if she was, she would have listened to him when he told her to stop abusing her children.
And he doesn't live with her, right? Or does he?
I don't know at this point. I know that he kept going back and forth.
So he probably ain't paying her bills.
I mean, like, he's a truck driver.
So what's she
needing
for?
So he's away. So when he is there, he's splitting time between her and her kids and his kids, which are 200 miles away. So I don't think he's around that much. In early 1990, Keith and the waitress broke it off, and it was her initiation.
Thank God.
Moving into the killings, Keith had a record of angry and reckless driving, which caused him to lose his job. And he started hating both Rose and the waitress that he had been seeing.
What did Rose do? Left you because you're a creepy, sadistic fuck?
Well, and then also his views on women started changing altogether. He hated women at this point.
This dude, man.
Everybody good?
No.
Do we need a breather?
Yeah, but I don't get one.
You wanna do a tangent?
No, I just want to get this shit over with.
We're at page 4 of 10.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, so Keith lost his job after the waitress broke up with him. He was angry. He started hating women. And then, January 21, 1990, Keith walks into a bar full of anger, because that's just him. He's angry. And he meets a, quote, warm and pretty girl, end quote, named Tanya Bennett, who was 23 at the time. Tanya runs over to him, throws her arms around him, says something or another, welcomes him to the bar, and then runs back to her friends at the pool table. So because he was so confused, a waitress or the
bouncer?
Lady behind the bar.
Oh, bartender?
Thank you, my God. The bartender told him that Tanya actually has a mental disability, and she greets everybody that way.
Aw.
Keith leaves, goes home, feels lonely, can't stop thinking about Tanya, goes back to the bar. Decides he is interested in her because of her mental disability.
Wow.
That was a face.
I know, there's nothing to say in this case other than, like, oh, go die, dude. That's it.
Keith goes back to the bar to find Tanya, asks her if she wants to go get something to eat, to which she says yes. So they got in Keith's car, and then he told Tanya that he needed to stop at his house to grab some cash, and then asked her to go inside with him. So once inside the house, Keith tried to make a move on Tanya, which caused her to run for the door. Then he dragged her to the bedroom, raped her multiple times before she begged him to stop. Keith claims that he punched Tanya in the face because she talked back to him. He said that he only wanted to knock her out so that he could continue to rape her, because this is his thing. But she was never knocked out, so he kept punching her. She ended up being bruised and bloody, but still conscious. Then he freaked out and strangled her. He said he didn't intend to kill her, but that's just what happened.
No. Strangling is the one crime that you can never claim. I didn't mean to do it. Because you have to hold someone's neck for like 10 minutes to strangle them to death. It is very intentional.
Yeah. You're so stressed.
I have no sympathy for this dude, man. I have none.
Okay. Yeah, the sympathy was just at the early years.
It was like the first 15 minutes, and now I'm just like, dude, someone kill this man. And I don't even enjoy the death penalty. I don't even support the death penalty. And so how did he get life in prison without parole? How did he not get the death penalty?
I think it was a spite towards him.
Oh, that he had to stay there? Like, stay in prison?
His hope at the end was to get the death penalty.
Yeah, never mind. Leave him in prison, man. Prison justice. Okay.
So he's killed Tanya. This is his first kill. He washes his clothes, puts them back on, returns to the bar, drinks for a few hours to establish an alibi. When he drives back home, he looks for spots to dump the body. When he got home, he tied a rope around Tanya's neck and put her in the front seat of his car. He then dumped her body into a ravine leading to the Columbia River Gorge. Then Keith went to a truck stop to continue to have an alibi. He dumped Tanya's purse and phone in a bush somewhere and then returned home to clean the blood from his home. Now, get this. He steam cleans his carpet twice. That's some fucking forethought or afterthought.
Yeah, you're covering it up.
When he could not clean the blood from his ceiling.
Jesus Christ!
He punched her so hard and so many times he had blood on the ceiling.
Yeah, oh my.
He just painted over the ceiling because he couldn't get the blood out.
Okay, the only way he got away with this shit is because it was, what, the 70s, 90s?
It was 1990.
Yeah, that's the only reason why this fucker got away.
Let's talk about a woman named Laverne Pavlinak.
Laverne? I've never met a woman named Laverne.
Well, Laverne was in an abusive relationship. Aww. Her boyfriend's name was John something or another. We don't need to talk about him. He's a douche. Laverne confessed to the murder and implicated her boyfriend.
What? She confessed to Tanya's murder?
Yep.
Okay.
You heard it right. You are tracking what I'm saying. So, when the police did not believe her story, she said that she was forced by John to watch the rape and murder of Tanya. And when charges were filed against both Laverne and John, Laverne said she made it all up to get away from her abusive boyfriend.
Oh, honey.
So, random girl implicates her boyfriend and then herself because the police won't believe her. And then when she realizes she's going to go to jail, she backtracks. But the police don't believe her at this point. Keith got back together with one of his ex-girlfriends. We don't know her name, but the relationship had problems.
Yeah, because he's a fucking sadistic creep, bro.
So just 3 months after Tanya's murder, Keith met his next victim in April of 1990. He was on his way to a job in Sacramento, California, and he stopped in Shasta to sleep for the night. He ended up in the parking lot of a mall. So this girl is the one that he assaulted but let go. Her name, I'm pretty sure, is Dawn. So she was a 21-year-old woman. She was sitting alone in a parking lot nursing a baby. Keith saw that she looked upset and invited her to his car for a drive. She agreed. It's 1990. People are nice.
Yeah, I'm not accepting any rights.
When she got in the car, Keith made a move on her. She did not like this, and she even tried to get out of the car. So Keith ended up assaulting her. When she screamed and tried to get away, it made him angry, and he put her in a headlock, hoping to break her neck. Ugh. But then the baby started crying. which made Keith think that if he killed her, he'd have to kill the baby. And because of the abuse that he'd endured and the fact that he had children of his own, he had vowed to himself to never hurt a child. So Keith decided to threaten the woman multiple times and then let her go. So this lady tries to run, but Keith offered her a ride wherever she needed to go since it was cold outside. So because his demeanor had changed, the woman allowed Keith to drive her back to the mall parking lot where they had met. He drove her back and dropped her off. Keith kept driving into a town called Corning, California, and then walked into a motel hoping to get a good night's sleep. In the lobby, Keith was arrested for assaulting the woman from the parking lot in the mall. From the mall parking lot. Here we go again. Okay, we're done. I don't care. Keith told police officers the same story that the woman did, except he said that she was lying about him trying to break her neck.
That's the only part that she lied about.
Yeah, right? Like, why would she call them? Like, it's... So the police eventually believe Keith, and they decide that he did not intend to hurt the woman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, good police work. So they let him go, but then tell him that he had to return to Shasta to be interviewed by the local police there.
Cool. And did he do that?
He did, actually.
Wow.
When he returned, he was charged with battery assault and pleaded no contest. The police let him go but told him to keep in contact while the matter was being resolved. Okay.
So we just letting criminals free on good faith,
so,
huh?
So, no contest means he's not admitting to it, but he's not saying he didn't do it. It's basically a cop-out of saying, yes, I was charged with this, but I didn't admit guilt. So Keith then continued to drive to Sacramento for his job. Unfortunately, because of this incident, Keith determined that he couldn't let anybody else go if he got in a predicament again because the police would show up. So lesson learned. His relationship with his girlfriend continued to decline, and he felt like he was invisible to the entire world.
Yeah, you're nobody, dude. Nobody gives a fuck about you.
October of 1990, Keith moved to Washington to be closer to his children because his 10-year-old son fell and got a concussion. So he and his girlfriend relocated to Spokane. Keith made it a point to try to do more and be better, like a better father, after the move. But Rose apparently did not think he was a good father, and his girlfriend believed that he was not a good boyfriend. So he's getting pressure all over the place. Fast forward January 1991, Laverne Pavlinak and her boyfriend John were convicted of the murder of Tanya Bennett.
Ugh.
When Keith saw this, he felt as if he again was not getting the recognition that he deserved in any aspect of his life.
Oh my god.
Are you playing your tiny violin?
Yeah, seriously. The world's tiniest violin. The white male ego is so fucking fragile that if they don't even get recognized for murdering someone, they're upset.
Keith and his girlfriend both got jobs as long-haul truckers, which meant that they were often paired together for lengthy drives, which is not good for your relationship, especially if it's already on the rocks.
Yeah. That's why when people say, like, oh, could you work with your boyfriend or your spouse? And I'm like, no, that's way too much fucking time together. And everyone always looks at me like, oh, how can you say that? I'm like, I can easily say that, dude.
That's way too much time together. That's how. Well, did you see it? Do you need me to say it again? Look at me. That's too much time together.
Who wants to spend that much time together?
I don't know. Like, Travis and I work on technically the same contract, but it's different sides, so we do different jobs, and we don't, I mean, we sit near-ish each other, but
you don't sit right next to each other, and you guys have your alone time when you come home, because you have separate apartments.
Don't live together, exactly. Yeah. If we lived together and worked together,
no.
We'd kill each other, and our cats would too, because they don't like each other.
Oh, your cats don't like each other?
Here's your tangent. My cat, Oliver, is a boy. He's a douche.
Love you.
He loves herding other cats. He doesn't really like other animals.
Herding? Like moving them into a corner?
He will chase them. He'll force them to run, chase them, and then he slaps their butt.
What?
Which Peanut, Travis's cat, does not fucking like. She hates it. If Oliver even looks at her now and they're like 3 feet from each other, she will flip out. It is the funniest thing. It is so funny.
Yeah, Peanut looks like she takes no shit.
Oh, she doesn't.
No shit at
she
all.
She doesn't even like it when I pick her up and hold her for 3 seconds. She just goes, wee!
That's a very good, whatever, imitation.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, there's my cat tangent.
Yay. All right, well, I think I've had enough of your torturous case.
Yeah, we should probably do a little intermission. We're actually going to split this episode into two different parts because it's way too long and there's way too much anxiety and drama. So
yeah.
Join us again next week for part two of Keith Jesperson, the Happy Face Killer.
We'll see you then.
Goodbye.
Bye.